Okay, this is Donna Brass Stocks. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question for you, but before I do that,
This is Mr. P. How are you, sir?
I understand, Honor, madam. I'm forgetting formalities because, isn't it? After sitting here and hearing the last caller, I'm not talking about the vouchers. I am not talking about the vouchers. I'm not going to dispute that with him. All I will say about that, I was here to know that any government office, whether D or B, take those things only for their supporters. That's all I will say. Before I answer the question, I heard Lady T yesterday mentioned that there are over 15 consultants assigned to the Prime Minister's office. What I would like to know is, what are their duties? What are the salaries and allowances? Because I hear talk about cutting or bonds and all kinds of different things I hear about. And anything you suggest that politicians' salaries or allowances should be taken away, you hear that that's just being talking. Right? I am sick. I'm fed up of poor people who are already suffering being asked to suffer more. Right? Now, I remember during the last election campaign, things were said of the last party and not disputing that because they were sound. But I would like to think that when you criticize something, when you get there, you would remedy the problem. For instance, reducing the amount of ministers from 17 to 12. Then kind of things. I heard talk about nepotism. It still exists. But whenever it comes to making sacrifices, it's always the small man. Always. As Peter Thosh said in one of his songs, he want a peace, he want equal rights and justice. And what you see going on, then the equal rights and then the justice. And you got people up there, and it comes from both sides, because they support a party, don't care what wrong to do. It's already going to be soon here, one of them called. They says prepare documents. I am sick and fed up of that. I know that there's no government that can satisfy the needs of all suffering people. I know that. How long has Mr. Clark represented the constituents of St. George North? How many years?
I don't know. I don't know, Mr. P. I'm just listening to you.
I know it's in double digits. You need to take a drive in St. George and see the condition of the roads in St. George. That gentleman held the portfolio of Minister of Transport and Work. And the worst words you could ever come across, there's a road that when you leave the turnpike heading towards St. George by the church, when you pass the road that would take you to Eastland, you pass that the very next road. If that isn't the worst word in Barbados, nothing is. And it's not a road where no houses are. There are numerous houses. I have seen other cases in the same constituency. Railroads are filled with potholes. I, look, politicians have a way of knowing much.
Barbados. I wouldn't expect that Mr. Clark would insulate his constituency simply because he was Minister of Public Works. We had a road problem for a long time. Thank you for your contribution. Donna Brastocks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hello, Peter. Ezra Fion here.
Hey, how are you doing, Ezra?
I'm fine.
How's it been? I have not spoken to you in a long time.
I am now reinventing my culinary skills in the kitchen. Like you.
Yeah, I've been trying to think myself.
Put it back up my book of recipes and dusting off my skills. I was interested in the point you made earlier about the capacity of government to pay employees and the budgetary constraints and so on. This is a reality that faces all employers in the face of the current situation. And I was impressed with your comment, your observation that unless government can collect taxes, has the capacity, civil servants have to face the reality of not being able to enjoy the salaries that they're accustomed to. Mm-hmm. And private sector employers themselves have serious difficulties in this respect. And I was attracted to the current dispute between the workers' union and Piconco, which to my mind suggests that we may be heading for a period of serious instability in industrial relations if our employers fail to respect the traditions of collective bargaining and the rights of unions in those traditions. Piconco's operations manager, Mr. Reeves, reported to have said that we're waiting on the union to organize an agreement for reduction in pay. But then he goes on to say that the stakeholders met and agreed on a structure of wage cuts for top management, middle management, and production workers, low level. Now, you can't set a policy to cut wages unilaterally when the union and you are having discussions. And this is a fundamental breach of a fundamental principle of industrial relations, that you can't be discussing and negotiating with the union and suddenly go and independently make a decision and cut the workers' pay. Because this, the operations manager did not deny the allegation by Mr. Paul. That's a serious matter.
But go ahead.
Mm. Yeah, so if, and the union has gone the route of the Labor Department in an effort to secure a remedy, there are options available to the union, because what the company has done is unilaterally, without consultation, altered the compensation of its employees. And I was very pleased to hear both Mr. Clark and the executive director of the Employers Confederation, Sheena Mears Granville, publicly chastising such behavior. And I think that's very commendable. Because if employers discover that they can do this, then hell is going to break loose at the workplace. Workplace relationships in Barbados will not reflect what I'm very impressed with, the national social partnership consultations and decision-making. We've always gloated and commended our national social partnership, notwithstanding difficulties between unions in organizing in the C2SAB environment. We don't have that same willingness and trustworthiness at workplace level. And what we're seeing here in the Piconco affair is an example of what is likely to happen if employers use the tremendous amount of power and influence that they have in this current economic environment, where jobs are very scarce and people are anxious to preserve half of a loaf, not even a whole loaf, and take advantage of employees.
I'm going to ask you this. No, Ellsworth, my issue is this. There seems to be a perception that Piconco can do better and is choosing not to do better. And it is that is disadvantaging workers. You would agree with that assessment?
Yes.
Right. Now, I think my question is really, how do we get to a place where we determine whether or not Piconco can do better? Because I think that the perception that they can do better is untested. And I would not want to judge the capacity of an organization to do better without giving them the opportunity to say, look, this is my bottom line. This is my situation financially. I can really not afford it. And that's the challenge with government, that I think that there is a belief and a perception that government can do better because they have all this money. So the red herring of the size of the cabinet keeps coming up, and people are saying, well, the cabinet is proof that government has money, because clearly if they didn't have money, the cabinet would be so big. Forgetting that it's not really a comparative situation when you look at a minister's salary as opposed to, you know, excessively large numbers of public servants. So that's my thing. I do feel that there needs to be some objectivity in our determination of whether or not Piconco can do better. But I think the issue really stems from the fact that people believe they can, and are choosing not to do so and disadvantaging workers in the process. The same kind of conversation is taking place with regard to the airlines. I mean, we haven't had it in the Caribbean because everybody knows that LIAT is broke. So the fact that LIAT has furloughed most of their workers is not a surprise to anyone. But when you look at the conversation with Virgin in the United Kingdom, and the British government or people inside the British government are saying to Branson, you know, you're independently wealthy, you're worth billions of dollars, you should pay the workers yourself out of pocket. Why are you coming to government for a bailout? And that is a perception that people have that, you know, Branson is wealthy and he has money, but they really haven't. And he made the point that a lot of his money is invested in companies that have essentially lost millions and millions of dollars. So as a result, his shares and his interest is now worth a lot less. So anyhow, final word from you in response, and then we go.
Yes, but Pekonko have a constitution that governs the relations between them and the union, and they can't conclude an agreement like that, have discussions with the union on wage cuts, and then ignore the union and cut the wages arbitrarily. That's a serious violation of a fundamental breach that is red flag to unions. Now, the Barbados Workers Union has opted to go the route of the chief labor officer in an effort to secure a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other options available to them.
Mm-hmm.
The Employment Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
The individual employees can sue for unfair constructive dismissal under the ERA, because the employer has, by his action in cutting wages unilaterally, dismissed them unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the union's right.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they've gone to the route of the Labor Department suggests to me that they prefer an amicable settlement, and they don't be comfortable with back away, having cut wages and implemented the decision to reduce the pay by 5%.
Yeah.
They're not going back down now. They've done it. If they're back down, they would implicitly agree an act of wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so that is a serious matter which I think the government will have to look at in terms of correcting the tremendous change in the balance of power. You will find more employers, Peter, believe you me, behaving like this in their best interest.
Yeah.
To ensure some degree of efficiency and cost effectiveness within the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So the workers union would have to sit down and reflect on its relationship with C2SAB, the larger trade union movement, and to heal that divide between them and the leadership of C2SAB in order to bring about a more cohesive national labor movement that can address these issues that will inevitably arise.
Okay.
What do you think with that?
Yeah. No, I don't have a difficulty with the argument that you've raised. My problem is that this is a crisis, and I suspect that something like that is not going to happen. No. You know? But certainly the long term, you know, for sure, we need to look at these kinds of methods. Right? All right, sir. Thanks again for calling, and good chatting with you. And we say good morning and welcome to the next caller.
Good morning, Peter.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I hang in.
Yeah.
Now, before I start my conversation with you, I want you to explain to me what I heard Glenn Clark said just now. Did he say that he gave up $15,000 in a day or two?
He said he gave out 16,000 vouchers, right? He gave in a couple of days, yeah.
$16,000 vouchers or
$16,000? The money, yeah, vouchers worth that, vouchers to that effect. Vouchers to the quantity of that, yeah,
$16,000. Mm-hmm. Now, let me go for some mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and he also said that, or let me give you first part first. A constituency usually carries between 6,000 and 7,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Good?
Carry on, sir.
Now, after the 6,000 or 7,000 people, he said you are not to give people who are working, who receive a national insurance, or anything of that sort.
Right.
So I want you to do some deductions. Let us assume that 10%, again the lowest figure, 10% of the people of the 6,000 constituency is working. 5% receiving national insurance. I would like Glenn Clark to come back to the air and tell me how 6,000 people to 7,000 people in a constituency, how he delivered that 15,000 to 16,000.
But he said it. Come off it, sir. He said that. He said that he did not. Sir, he said he did not. In instances, the smallest person got two.
But I talk about $15,000.
Yeah, but if you have two vouchers.
Good dear Peter.
You're deliberately trying to obfuscate the issue.
I'm deliberately. I try to put it.
There are families that would have received several vouchers. The vouchers are $50 a piece, and they're.
I have already said that. That is why I took out the percentage that working and the percentage that receiving national insurance. And when you take out them figures and you add up them, tell me how on earth could he give up $15,000? I want to...
$16,000.
Oh, $16,000. You make it work.
If you get a family that has 10 people and you're given... Sorry?
You don't got that 10... The family with 10 people, no? Don't come with that.
Well, you may have families with four. And families with four would have gotten, what, four vouchers? Or five vouchers?
At $50.
Persons who were, right, they would get him four, so they get $200.
Exactly.
Right.
I want to calculate the $16,000. Help me, man.
I ain't helping you. Anyhow, sir, what else you have for me today?
All right, let me left that here.
Can you want me to hurt my head with masks and thing? No, I haven't done any calculations since the COVID started.
All right.
I was home cleaning and thing, cooking and learning how to cook food.
I wanted from the early stage to be with the frozen chickens.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that the Minister of Agriculture is going to reduce our in collaboration with poultry producers in order to get the frozen chickens off the back. They are trying to stop importing chickens, turkey wings and chickens. Now let me tell you this, Peter. This supermarket, I will not call the name that I shop at. Anytime they have frozen chicken, they put up a different price than the fresh chickens. You following me?
I'm following you.
Yeah. Why it is that before this COVID, the consumer was crying out for the price of chickens. These producers had markets for the chickens. We could not even get a chicken wing. The average man in Barbados, the poor person, as Glenn talked about the poverty, had to depend on buying chicken wings and turkey wings in order to supplement the proteins. Now it is that you big producers, don't have no outlet. You are agreeing now to remove chicken wings and turkey wings from the poor man to supplement what you would consider the big gourds that never ever look back at the small man and said, well, let me put this as a reasonable price that he could purchase. I thought any reasonable minister would at least the chicken wings and the turkey wings on display so that the average man can purchase what he can afford and do not pressure him and to buy anything that he cannot afford, right or wrong.
I think that you're probably, in theory you're right, but isn't it practical to assume that fresh chicken should be given priority under the circumstances while the frozen chicken could
stop in the freezer? I said they had supermarkets that whenever they have frozen chicken, they would reduce the price. Well, there's nothing new. What I am complaining about is why should you try to force the consumer into purchasing things that he cannot afford?
No, but the point is being made that they are telling people that they can't buy the frozen chicken so that they would have to buy the fresh chicken.
Mr. Dodger, well, you got it wrong. They're trying to get all the frozen chickens out.
I'm reading the article here, and it says that they will halt the sale of wings
before the baby chickens.
Right. So, well, the farmers are supposed to be able to get rid of the glut of their frozen chicken.
Exactly. That's what I did. Though, had not for the glut, they're going to drop the price.
But that is basic demand and supply. I misunderstood the whole frozen thing. But the point is that you really want to prohibit the sale of
imported chicken wings,
right? So that they can get rid of their stock.
I am saying.
But what's the problem with that?
I am saying you should not pressure the consumer into that. Since you know, and since Glenn explained today, how poverty is in the island, why should you force the poor consumer now if he could get 2 pack of chicken wings for $20? Why should he go?
But he will have access to cheaper fresh chicken.
He should give him a choice.
No, he will have access to cheaper chicken.
Only because that them.
But you know, because
I am telling you, it is not genuine. These frozen chickens are on sale because they don't have a.
You think that the sale on pork that going on now with pork virtually giving away, you think that genuine?
But I just said that. It's not genuine.
No, but the point is that it is a response to a glut situation, and you are assuming. I set the price of chicken because I figured I want to make money in Poco people's eyes. You don't assume that I set the price of chicken because I'm running a business and that's the way that I can maintain an operational business.
What I am saying to you, you should not have compulsory purchase. From the time you prohibit chicken wings and turkey wings, you got a compulsory if you want. Chicken, you got to buy my frozen chicken. That's all I'm saying.
Why have been told regarding this whole issue of the importation of wings and so on, that once chicken wings come into the country, local producers cannot compete. They simply cannot compete because it will always be cheaper than what they can produce.
Because of factory
farming overseas. Hold on a second. My understanding is that it is in a way done to protect the local producers. And in a situation like this, the last thing you want is competition in terms of price. So you tell the local producers to drop your price, make your product available, and we will ban the chicken wings for the time being. They will stop in the freezer until such time as they get rid of their local glut. I don't understand the problem with that. And you're saying you want genuineness. And I'm saying to you that I appreciate that you will get pork at prices now that you will not have gotten before because there's a glut.
You will get
chicken at prices because there's a glut. And there's a glut because nobody could sell, nobody could consume.
Pork,
right.
Frozen pork.
We shouldn't be eating the pork anyhow, but anyhow.
I got to take this time before I met my last friend. Okay. You know, you always like going against pork. I take this time about a pig. You know, a pig can't look back.
It can't look back?
No.
Okay.
Good.
I didn't realize that.
Now, I got to give you something.
Yeah, the pig ears. Oh, yeah, that's true. No, but with the ears is blocked then?
No, the neck is not a rotating neck.
Oh, the neck can't. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So when you're butchering a pig, you could come from behind.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Let me tell you something. This can shock you now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I called former Prime Minister Stewart recently. I make an apology. He's all right, and I make an apology to him.
Okay.
And I tell you why. And when we become moderators or we become people who make ourselves public by speaking, you should always deal with the truth. You agree with me?
You should, yeah.
Yes. Now, I call Stuart. Let you know this. Stuart and I was friends from 1971. But I don't mix friendship with politics. And when I feel you're doing something wrong, I go after you. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me say this. I had to apologize to him. And he said the things that he spoke about had come to pass.
Regarding
you
what?
Remember?
He spoke about the COVID?
No. He spoke about the COVID.
Last time they had full employment was during slavery?
You could remember he spoke about...
Temporary means temporary.
Strength. He would not strengthen the connections with the CCJ. You remember? Where you got upset and you thought about the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So why were you not convinced that he was right on the CCJ?
Let me finish. I will tell you that later on.
Mm-hmm.
You remember he was also against CEDUSAP. He wanted to know how the employers and the workers could sit together. You remember that?
I didn't remember that. But
okay.
He was?
You remember he spoke about these external organizations, the rating agencies and such like.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe questioned that?
All right. But you get to the point, though. So what was what is he saying?
I call in these things that I tell you I apologize to him for.
Okay. All
right. Right? You remember that recently the Attorney General was very concerned about the blacklisting.
Mm-hmm.
And said that there were more or less convicted without trial.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same point that George was speaking right. about.
He apologized to you for anything?
We had apologized by making the apology because it was against him and he heard of it.
Which is fine, and I'm happy that you've had an epiphany, you've seen the light, and that you have come to him and apologized. I too issued an apology to a former prime minister, and I know.
And last but not least, and I want him.
Mm-hmm.
I can say this now on the air. I want him to make his presence felt in this nation, you know why?
Too sure?
Let me give you the reason why. I can give you history too. There are only two prime ministers that were attorney generals in this island. You know who that?
Was this him and C.B. Smith? I don't know.
Nah, C.B. Smith.
Motley and himself.
Mayor Motley.
Yeah, and himself.
And Brandon Stewart. Mm-hmm. Two attorney generals that became prime ministers. And what I would like him to come to the public and explain, they were talking about the act that was passed in 2007. The Attorney General was there at the time, and in 2008, when the government won, the DFP won the government, he was the first.
Did he not say that he was expecting to be engaging? Because he said that he was giving them a chance to do, and then he would be... You know, the last speech he made, he said he was waking up from his slumber.
Yes.
So you gone back to sleep. When you called him, he was sleeping?
He was not sleeping. You send people at the pass and wait all and they come by you. You may have got a good sleep. You know you. Anyhow.
That's good, though. I'm happy that you're a man enough to apologize.
Exactly.
I don't know whether I would feel the need to similarly apologize to the individual in any hurry. Perhaps there may come a point in time, as I said, with Saloid, after some years pass, I felt moved to go to his home and apologize to him on an occasion, because there were a lot of things I didn't understand. I do feel that it's an opportunity for us to understand and grow as individuals. So there may come a point in time where I may also apologize to Frando Stewart. I don't think that's going to be soon, though. But as I say, you're a bigger man than me. All right, sir, thanks a lot for calling. Lady asked me to raise a question with the situation. Right. Good morning, Mr. Wickham. I would like to ask a question. I have heard as long as you're getting a survivor's benefit for a child or children whose parents have passed, that those children are not entitled to any of the money from the Sandy Lane Trust. I think it's unfortunate because to their friends, and I think it is not good. I would like to ask a question, please, before you leave the studio. Ma'am, I have asked a question on your behalf. I think it is important to understand that the Sandy Lane Trust money distribution is governed by the Sandy Lane Trust. And they have said that while it is possible that people receive some small amount of money from somewhere else, it is not enough. They are more concerned about the fact that there are people out there who are not receiving anything at all, and that they want their money to be given priority to people who are essentially in a situation where they have no source of income, no money coming in from anywhere. And there are certainly a lot of those people. Somebody also asked me to tell the taxi man that apparently the wings are more expensive than whole chicken. When it comes onto it, I wasn't aware that wings were more expensive than whole chicken, but apparently this is what I am being told. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Hmm. Greetings, sir.
Yes, greetings.
Greetings to Mr. Johnson and to all listeners.
Okay, he's waving at you.
When we have a disaster or a crisis, we look for answers.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we turn to the Google.
To the Google?
The Google, the internet.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sometimes we turn, we ask the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you ask the Almighty.
But that's where I'm getting to know.
Okay.
Then we ask all sorts of persons.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the disaster, we utter two words.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. That's not all the only time that people say, oh, God, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because I want to just read a verse.
They may also say, oh, God, at times of excitement.
No problem.
Okay. It's an interesting comparison, you don't think?
Pardon me?
Adversity and excitement, the same thing you're saying is, oh, God.
Oh, God. But the point is, Isaiah 30:14, it says there, like the swift or the thrush, so I keep chirping. I keep cooing like a dove. My eyes look weary to the height. Oh, Jehovah. And as you say, Mr. Wickham, most times in disaster, people say those two words. But how many times does they turn to the Bible and open it, read it, pages, to seek answers or solutions as quickly, as reliably, and as confidently as they turn to the internet? How regularly do they do that? But the Word of God, Peter, is a source of provision by God Almighty Jehovah. At Revelation chapter 22, verse 17, he issued an invitation. And he says there, and the Spirit and the bride keep on saying, come. Let anyone hear and say, come. Let anyone thirsting come. Let anyone who wishes takes life water free.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Mr. Wickham, the Holy Word is like water. And water is very important and vital to our survival. It is said that you can go a couple of days without food, but without water, we are in for a lot of problems. On the other hand, water must be clean and without toxic waste. And in this case, as it is a unique form of water, hear what the prophet John went on to say at John 22, verse 1. And he showed me a river of water of life, clear as crystal clear, Wickham, flowing out from the throne of God and of the Lamb.
Right. Let me ask you a question, sir. If I were to say to you, can your Bible tell me how to stop the spread of the COVID disease, what would you say? Because you made an unfortunate comparison. You said some people turn to Google, some people turn to the Bible. I want to stop the spread of COVID. So I turned to Google while I was listening to you quote Bible verses, and I typed in how to stop the spread of Google. And I received a response from Google that tells me standard recommendations to stop the spread of COVID-19 include frequent cleaning of hands with alcohol-based soap or water, covering the nose and mouth, flexed elbow, disposable tissues when coughing or sneezing, and avoiding contact with anyone that has a high fever or cough. Clear, simple instructions on how to stop the spread of COVID. If I were to say, instead of turning to Google, I'm going to turn to the Bible, how do I do a search of the Bible, and how do I get a four-line paragraph that is as concise as that regarding the spread of COVID? Over to you, sir.
In the law of Moses, sir.
Right.
In the law of Moses, it states there clearly that when you have leprosy, first thing to first, you have to shout out that you are a leper. And then you must be quarantined for 14 days. Also, the clothes that you wear must be burnt. And you are not to come out of that quarantine, even if you are all right, you still is to go into another 14 days to be sure that you are clean. So this what they're doing now is long written in the Bible, Mr. Vicar.
Okay,
you understand?
But if I want to stop from getting leprosy, if I want to stop from getting COVID, how do I avoid getting COVID? How do I stop? What does the Bible tell me about? Not what to do with me when I am infectious. How do I stop getting infected?
First thing, the Bible says you must identify that you have it so as to protect
it. So I should walk about and say, COVID, COVID, COVID. Like how do you still walk through the streets and say, leper, leper, leper?
That it won't do that, no way, that
thing.
But if you are,
but the Bible is the same today, tomorrow, and forevermore. Yeah. Well, sir, the music tells me that unfortunately we have to discontinue this biblical conversation. Dennis always seems to do this whenever I get into the Bible. I don't want me to talk about the Bible, sir. I enjoy my conversations with you, and I look forward to chatting with you again next week.